It's your inside pass to everything Saints football.
See you later, bye. Touchdown, Rashid Shaheed.
We'll take you to places most fans never go. To practice, to the sideline, to the locker room. Following every twist, turn, and touchdown of the Saints season.
That is going to be a touchdown, Taysom Hill. Taysom TD.
Welcome to Inside Black and Gold.
To the end zone, and that is a touchdown for Chris Olave.
Now, here are your hosts, Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak.
Welcome inside Black and Gold. Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak coming to you with the latest and greatest in Saints as we get ready for the NFL draft coming up. I will give Jeff a small window right here to do a little UConn boasting.
Ooh, I don't even think it's necessary anymore.
It's like, yeah, expected, been there, done that. We smoked everybody.
We were talking about yesterday or early before we came on, like, they didn't just win the last two titles. They won in such a way that I never felt stressed as a UConn fan at all. The most stress I felt was like with like 12 minutes to go against Alabama, where this like gangly looking white dude was making a bunch of crazy shots. I was like, this can't last forever. And they got it to tied. They were tied in the second half. And I think that might be the first time that's happened. That a team was tied with UConn in the second half of the last two tournaments. And I can't iterate enough how insane it is that UConn basketball exists in the form that it does. Like, go Google Maps UConn, Google Earth UConn, and appreciate that this is literally a school sitting in the middle of a cow pasture in Storrs, Connecticut, about 15 minutes from my hometown, which is Willimantic, Connecticut, which 60 Minutes playfully dubbed Heroin Town at some point in the early 2000s.
Wow.
Like, not an area that you would be like, oh, yes, college basketball mecca over there. No, it's nothing. There's nothing to do. And I think that's kind of what happens is, and Ray Allen said this, is like, there's literally nothing else to do there. It is a basketball laboratory. There's nothing else you can do but go to the gym and get better. And I don't know, maybe that's it, but you know, you look at like UConn men and women over the last like 25 years. Like Dan Hurley was like, UConn has been running college basketball for 25 years. He said that after the game. And on its face, you're just like, on its face, you're like, wow, what a bold take. And then you look and it's like, no, they kind of have. Since 1999, they've won 6 men's titles and what, like 12 women's titles? That's crazy.
Unbelievable, anyway. Right?
But yeah, and the only complaint anyone could have had prior to this was, oh, they haven't played anybody. They hadn't played anyone better than a 3, even though they went on a 30-0 run against the 3. Still, they haven't played any. Well, they played like objectively the second best team in the country, and they Purdue hit 1-3 in that game. How is that even possible? They only took 7. Why?
And poor Drew Brees in his sad Purdue jersey.
Yeah. Did you see him on the pregame show?
Yeah.
Poor guy. You know, the last two times he's been associated with Purdue was the 2022 Fiesta Bowl, and they got shellacked by LSU. And then this one where it was just like, that's the second best team in the country. And they lost by 15. So anyway, this is not a UConn men's basketball podcast, but Steve, I wasn't planning to talk about this. This is Steve's fault.
I had to have time to give your flowers to him. Come on.
Yeah. The only thing I'm mad about is like last year I won all my bracket pools because I picked UConn because I'm a UConn homer. This year I came in third because the two people above me also took UConn. Anyway, this is a Saints podcast. We're going to talk about Saints stuff. And like we promomised at the end of last week and last week's episode, we're going to do a breakout players episode today. And I think it's a good time to do that because we're getting closer to draft season, but we're at that time where we've talked about all of these prospects as much as we're going to. All we're getting now are these bullshit unsourced reports about how Malik Nabers has character concerns, right? Oh, you won't put your name on it, but you know, it's almost like team drafting 10th wants Malik Nabers, you know. A.T. Perry dropped because of character concerns that he literally does not know what they are.
Right.
Like that happens. So anytime you're like looking at the reporting and being like, that seems like it's designed to benefit a team that couldn't draft him if he goes number 8. Right. So anyway, then that's the Falcons. So maybe it is 8. I digress. But so we're not going to really talk about the draft so much. We're going to talk about players on the Saints that will be breakout candidates for us. which I think would inform some of your decision making as you decide, okay, how much do the Saints really need a player at this position, at this position, at this position, or would they be better off trusting the players they have? So I think that's going to be a fun little segment. We'll do two segments. We'll do defense in the second segment and offense in the third segment. But first, this segment, you know, we don't really have enough news. Not much has happened to call it a rundown, but there are a couple things I want to go over. Derek Carr went on Instagram, started talking to people, and he had one really interesting answer that I want to get into because it hits on a topic that we've talked about previously. And then we also heard from Bobby Hebert, who talked about the offensive tackle position, which the closer we get to the draft and the season, the more dire it seems. Like,
you don't have a quarterback
that can survive not having a tackle. Like, you don't have Jaden Daniels. You don't have Caleb Williams. You have Derek Carr. You don't have a guy that's going to run around and make these bad tackles look better. So it's concerned. So we'll get into that. But first, did you catch any of the Derek Carr on Instagram stuff?
Yeah, I saw, and I figure folks would be mad. He's not in Louisiana right now. He's in hanging out in Nevada.
Well, I mean, that you live where you live, right? Like, I'm never going to hold that against you. I got mad about the Mardi Gras stuff because I don't think it's unreasonable to expect the quarterback of the New Orleans Saints to he can do whatever he wants. He can just go to a parade for 5 minutes, take a picture and post it on Instagram to be like, yeah, I'm a part of the city. So I took offense to that. And people said, yelling at clouds, whatever. I don't have an issue with some guy not living here in the offseason. Like, Mike Thomas lived in Malibu for his entire Saints career. Like, I would live there too, you know? So I don't have an issue with that. I do think the Instagram
the first thing that came to that hit me was like, oh, he's not here right now.
No, that's where his kids go to school. You know, I don't have any issue with someone having a family somewhere that they lived for however long, right?
No, and he did mention in the clip, like, almost immediately, you know, we're here in, you know, the Vegas, we're going to be heading to New Orleans soon. So obviously, you know, he's not just stationary in one spot.
No, I'm sure they have a house there, right?
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, I don't know. It takes a while. Maybe he's building a house. I don't know, but, like, it's tough to do that in one offseason either way. So, basically, what happened, Derek Carr went on Instagram, posted, hey, you know, send me questions. And he didn't go live, but he did post them on his story. So, you couldn't go find them now. I kind of got to this late in the game because I was tied up during the weekend, and I didn't get to his story in time, but I was able to kind of cobble together some of these answers. And there's one that I found particularly interesting, but first I want to play this one because I just find it kind of funny.
It was a great one. I love these. Like, when we had to win 4 of our last 5 to even have a chance. Yeah. Nice try with the hate. We ain't doing that no more. Appreciate you, though.
Basically, someone said, I mean, this is what the question was. It says, show up when the game is winnable, not when we are down 20, and stop scamming us. Which, first of all, is just kind of funny. Like, I appreciate that. It's a good line. Second, like, you can tell this is something that annoys Derek to no end. And third, I want you to tell me who you think he's talking about throughout this entire clip.
This is a great one. I love these. Like, when we had to win 4 of our last 5 to even have a chance. Yeah. Nice try with the hate. We ain't doing that no more. Appreciate you, though.
Anything come to mind?
Talking about our former wide receiver on the Saints.
Yeah. What does he mean? We ain't doing that no more.
Right.
It seems targeted. But no, yeah, and it is funny because it's like you can look at it and say he's right. They did win 4 of their final 5 games. But the one game that they didn't win was one that looks a lot less bad than it was because they were down 20 in the fourth quarter and they ended up scoring a couple go-to-hell touchdowns. And, you know, that was a game where it's like, hey, you need to win this game to control your own destiny, and you didn't. And so you still had a chance, but losing that game ultimately is what kept you out of the playoffs. So yeah. It's not unreasonable. At the same time, I don't think the story of Derek Carr's season is getting into big holes and having garbage time stats. There were a couple games where that was true, but I've never understood that take of, like, all of his yardage was in garbage time. Because if that's your logic, like, they probably could have come back and won that Lions game if not for getting hurt, right? So it's like, if that's your logic, then any game you lose, all of your stats are garbage time.
Right.
So I don't know. Now, like, there were a couple games, right? Like, the Vikings game really didn't exist because you didn't really get any garbage time stats there. The Rams game is the best example of true garbage time. Because, yeah, you played the entire game and came all the way back. The Lions game, you probably could look at and say, okay, because you didn't win, but also he didn't get to play a majority of the fourth quarter, and so you don't know if they would have come all. I think they probably would have come all the way back, but then the other two are Houston and Jacksonville. That's, I think those are the games that people look at and they're like, oh, these are garbage time stats. I mean, so if Foster Moreau catches that touchdown and they tie the game and go in overtime, then it's not garbage time. So the difference between garbage time and not garbage time is a drop. That doesn't make sense. So I don't know. That take annoys me because it kind of just erases any nuanced conversation about like what the season was and how and when Derek Carr played badly and why versus when he played at a higher level and they won some games. I don't know. I hate that take because it just doesn't seem to get anywhere. It's just a circular logic to me.
No, I understand the complaint with the Saints needing to start faster. And if they're anything with this team, man, the offensive line obviously needs a huge boost from the passing game, and the run game was just abysmal last season. And it's still managed to come away with 9 wins. That's what's amazing to me, too. It's like, we're still not even talking about a 7-win team. They won 9 games a year ago, and it doesn't feel like that still.
No, and don't get me wrong. I don't like seeing the team getting 20-point holes and have to constantly dig their way out of them. Like, that's a huge issue, too. But, like, the garbage time stuff annoys me. I also wanted to play that clip because I've seen that one circulated on social media, but only the last, like, 5 seconds of it as a joke. So I figured people might be interested in hearing the entire answer in the context of the question. But let's move forward to the really interesting answer that I think is pretty telling, and let's just play it.
We play with them in New Orleans. That's who I love to play with. And boys, who's one guy in the past, like a pass receiver, you'd love to see Daddy throw to?
Hunter.
So, for context, the question is, who's one receiver who you would love to play with? And it's not saying like a guy you've played with before. It could be anybody. He could say Jerry Rice. Like, he could say Randy Moss. Like, I mean, like, he could say Plaxico Burress. Like, he could have said anybody. And, you know, he started with a PC answer of like, oh, I already play with him, right? And then he kind of threw it to his kids, who it's like, you know your kids, right? Like, if you ask them certain questions, you know what the answer is going to be. And they were quick.
Boom.
And Hunter. And if you're unaware, it's Hunter Renfro, former Raiders wide receiver. You probably, if you listen to his podcast, you know who he's talking about because I've talked about him. But he's a free agent right now. And I do think that as a quarterback of a team, you don't want to go on social media and say, I really wish they would go sign my buddy Hunter. But, I mean, there's no rules to say your kids can't say that.
Right. That's how he gets away with it. This might have been the same kid, though, that he started booing after his math homework.
That's true. And maybe Hunter was like, hey, Derek, don't boo your kids. But no, I think it's funny because like Derek's answer is the correct one, which is like, if I say a name of a current player, then if I say Devontae Adams, right. Then it's going to be spun as, wow, Derek's basically saying, I don't want to play with Chris Olave. Right. And he also didn't say Chris Olave, because then it'd be like, oh, he likes this guy more than Rashid or AT, right? So it's like he answered that question correctly. But keep in mind, he didn't have to answer it at all. He picks these. I'm sure he got a lot of these and didn't respond to them. He chose to respond to this one.
Well, I'm sure there were really nice kind ones that he, you know.
Yeah, like he didn't have to. If he was like, yeah, I don't want to open up that, you know, can of worms, I don't want to stick my fist in that bee's nest, he was like, I'm gonna do it, but I'm gonna do it in a sneaky little way that lets my kids tell the team who they should go sign. And we've talked about this, like, I think that's a signing kind of like Jarvis Landry a few years ago, where you don't need to do it right now, and the longer you wait, the better deal you're probably going to get as a team. So I wouldn't be surprised if you get into the last couple weeks prior to camp or mini camp, at least mandatory mini camp, and you see all of a sudden, okay, sign a Hunter Renfro. Either way, I thought that answer was kind of funny because it's very thinly veiled, and his kids were like right on the money with it.
It's crazy when you look at it. Obviously, you know, you know the name Hunter Renfro. He's not anybody that's going to wow you with what he's done, but man, 2021, an impressive 100 catch, 9 touchdown season.
Yeah, 1,000 yards.
Right.
He's just a guy. He's just reliable. He's the type of guy that I just don't know. Like, you have a lot of really high upside young players in this offense.
For sure.
But you, I don't see that kind of just third down chain mover that you trust implicitly. And Chris Olave is, you could say he's that. Like, you could tell me I'm wrong and that Chris Olave is that. But I just, I don't know. I haven't seen him necessarily be that consistently. And what happens if he gets hurt, right? You need to have depth to some extent. We've seen Chris miss games in each of the last two seasons, right? He's been very productive, but he has been somewhat injury prone. So who steps into that role if he's out? I don't know, Cedric Wilson maybe. So I think you do need to bring in somebody that that you have a little bit more institutional trust in. So, and I think Derek pretty unobtrusively told you who that should be.
Yeah, he's doing his little recruiting on social media.
Yeah, good for him. Now, I wish he would be a little bit more, you know, open to fans in terms of like, can you try to make people like you, at least make an effort? Like, I don't feel like that's been done necessarily at a high enough level. And I get it. It's tough. You get a lot of criticism. You're the quarterback and things didn't go well. You know, Saints fans, like, I think Saints fans are great, but they can be brutal when they feel like they are entitled to something and they don't get it. Okay. And you can argue that they should have gotten more out of this quarterback than they did in year one, but you could also argue that they didn't, it wasn't that bad relative to the response you got. But at the same time, I don't care, Derek, if that's your excuse for not going to Mardi Gras or whatever. That's what people told me. They were like, oh, he's just worried that they're going to be mean to him. So what are you, 12? You know, like that can't be the answer. And to be fair, he didn't say that. People told me that on his behalf.
Right, right.
A lot of them in comments on YouTube videos. But like, if you really believe that's the reason, then that's an even bigger issue. Are you afraid of your own fans? No, that can't be it. I hope not. I hope that's not true. I hope he's just busy in Vegas and had a lot to deal with this offseason. But anyway, yeah,
it wouldn't have been to me. I don't think fans would have suddenly turned and been like, boo, Derek Carr is at the parade, boo.
No.
It wouldn't have been like that at
really
all.
Misunderstanding like the spirit of Mardi Gras.
Exactly, right.
Like, no, they don't even boo like Ray Nagin, like the guy literally stole from the city. And like, anyway, so let's move on. Let's hear one more thing from Bobby talking about the offensive tackle position. This was on Sports Talk on Monday. Thought he had some good points here.
You got to win in the trenches. You can ask Sean Payton or Drew Brees this. You know, every fan follows the football. When we were truly special, we were a top five offensive line year in, year out, and controlling the line of scrimmage with the run and the pass. Our running game was terrible last year. Now, the one thing, you know, you look at free agency, you look at the draft, you might say, like, who's on the market that could be feasible? I mean, I don't know, but maybe you bring back Andrus Peat. I mean, you could draft a tackle that could start, but I think Andrus Peat right now, based on all he played last year, is an asset to the team.
How quickly things change, right?
Yeah, can you imagine Bobby saying that a couple of years ago?
We need to bring Andrus back, right? Who says that?
But I tend to agree. You know, I do think that the people are underestimating that the, like, they're not just saying this. Like, I think this team does have hope that Trevor Penning is their starter. I think one thing we do is we very much underestimate a team's willingness to develop a player. And it's like, it's not in front of us right now, so we ignore it. When Jeff Ireland says, like, hey, this is his first full offseason where he's healthy and is not trying to recover from a major issue or coming through the draft with this kind of whirlwind where everything's coming at 100 miles an hour, like, you're hopeful that he can improve. And I do think that a lot of times, because you don't see it, you underestimate, okay, if the coaching was not resonating and the coach was unable to work with a guy, yes, that's partially on the player, but it's also a big part on the coach. And that's why you fire the coach, the offensive line coach, and Doug Marrone. And so you're hopeful that with Trevor, you can develop a guy and have him be more productive and at least stick with him. Like, he's not going to be perfect, but you have to be willing to ride it out so that he can improve. I don't think they're quitting on him. That said, you have no fallback right now. Should that fail, should that option fail, And it's just like the longer you go, the more obvious it's like Andres Pete's that guy, unless Clint Kubiak is like, yeah, Andres doesn't do the things I need him to do, which could be the case. But one way or another, you gotta get somebody in the room. Like, that's bleak right now.
And just when you think about, obviously, the versatility, the familiarity that a guy like Andres Pete has here, it makes sense. And obviously, there's nobody blowing him away with any kind of offer, so you can get him on the cheap, I believe.
You'd think. He hasn't signed anywhere yet, so.
And the only visit I can remember hearing of was Tennessee.
Tennessee, yeah. And the other thing is, like, he's a guy who has some versatility, right? So even if, like, I think there's value there in the sense that if you do need to do what you did last year and sit Trevor down, and then if that happens, then you're basically, yeah, you are quitting on him. Then you can move Andres outside, but you also can say, hey, James Hurst is not our best option at guard, and you can move him at guard, or you can do whatever right. At guard. So I do think there's cross-positional versatility there, which DA loves. It feels like the farther you go in this process and neither team really brings in anybody other than Ali Udo, who I don't think is going to be that, you know, a backup. It just seems more and more likely that Andres is that guy. But one way or another, you got to do something. I agree with Bobby on that.
Yeah, and what's weird with Pete, too, he seemed to play better at the tackle position, so I don't know what you do either.
Yeah, I mean, he played well enough. It's tough because, like, right. there's a lot of positions that I can watch and be and give you a good assessment of whether they're doing things the right way or the wrong way, right? Whether they ran the right route, whether they're getting to the right depth, you know, that sort of thing. You know, whether you miss a tackle because you get bad technique, or, you know, whether you're doing your assignment wrong. With offensive line, it's so tough, because right. There's so many different techniques. And unless you played the position, it's really difficult to kind of have an understanding of what they're trying to do versus what they are achieving, and whether they're doing the little things right. Because you can get beat. You can do everything right and get beat. But the issue is when you're doing everything wrong and getting beat. And I think that's what was happening, is when he was doing things wrong even when he was winning. And that's a problem for a coach and for a player who's trying to develop. Anyway. That's it. That's all I got. Anything else you want to hit on before we move to the breakout player segments?
No, ready to move on into it and to see I'm interested to see how many we are in agreement on here. Like, was nice to see last mock draft. Boom, we had the same second round pick. I thought it was funny.
That's true. Yeah. Yes. That's all I got. Anyway, this is Inside Black and Gold. If you're listening and you haven't subscribed yet, please do that. Wherever you get your podcasts, if you haven't subscribed on YouTube, ring the bell, leave us a comment. We haven't had a rating or a review in a long time on Apple Podcasts, which I guess that can be a good thing or a bad thing, right? Because, like, we're not pissing anybody off to the point where they need to go and complain, but we're also not making anybody happy enough where they feel like they need to go and share their thrilling adventure on our podcast. So I don't know, if you got a second and you use Apple Podcasts, go ahead and do that. Otherwise, you know, you're dead to me. Just kidding. I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Steve Geller. You can follow me on Twitter @Jeff_Nowak. Follow him @Steve Geller, WWL. Follow the show @Saints_pod. We're going to go through breakout players, starting with the defense. Stick around. And we're back on Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Steve Geller. As promised, we're going to go through our breakout players, or the players we expect to potentially break out in the 2024 season. Before we came on, Steve, you're telling me, it's weird. My list is a lot of second-year guys. And I was like, yeah, there's a lot of times they're going to be second-year guys. It's tough to be a breakout player as a six-year veteran. But hey, you never know. Either way, this segment, we're going to start with defensive players, and we'll start with you, Steve. Who is at the top of your list of breakout candidates? Like, this isn't necessarily predicting a massive season, but it's more just identifying the players who could have a much bigger impact this year than they did last year.
Starting right off the bat, going to go right up front in the trenches, and a guy like Brian Brzee, who I thought had a pretty decent rookie season. Obviously, we need to see more development, especially come the run game. But I feel like there was a lot to like about Brzee year one, and looking forward to seeing how much more he can mature and develop for that sophomore surge, at least.
Yeah, you know, he's a tough one. He was on my list, but I kind of moved him down, not because I have low expectations for him, but because the expectations he's created with his with his first season,
right,
make it tough. Like, in order for him to break out to surprise people, he'd have to have an Aaron Donald type like season, and maybe not that significant, but he'd have to have that type of impact.
He managed 4.5 sacks last year, so it's like, well, I'm expecting now 9, right?
Right, and if he can get the double-digit sacks, sure, but like, I think a successful season year two for him would be being more consistent against the run, and that's just not going to blow people away, but it will, you know, you'll probably see higher tackle numbers, you'll probably see higher pressure numbers, and I like that pick. Obviously, people are excited about Brian, as they should be. You know, we talk about a lot of these bad picks, a lot of these people you would call a bust, and he's not one of them, at least not right now. Now, that can go the other way, right? Like Chase Young, for example, he was defensive rookie of the year in 2020. Fast forward to 2024, and the Saints are getting him on a one-year deal with very little interference. You know, part of that's due to injuries. Part of that's just due to the fact that he hasn't lived up to expectations. So it can go the other way. So it is important, even if you have if you start well as a rookie, you still need to continue to build on that. And I think Brian will.
Yeah, I think he's one of the guys too. Last year, maybe it was because obviously his rookie season, the Saints, the Who Dat Nation, he wasn't in their crosshairs of hatred at all.
No, because he was performing and you were seeing the impact. And a lot, you know, it's funny. A lot of that, I think, too, is like media reception, where everyone's talking about how good he's doing. So even if you don't really pay attention that closely, you're like, oh, they hit on this pick.
All right. He's doing something positive.
So we do have a role in that, right? Like, because not, you can't expect everyone to watch every defensive tackle play and be like, oh, just see, he won. Anyway. Because the trenches are so tough. And I feel the same way about offensive line. Like,
right,
so much of the time, the criticism thrown at offensive linemen is based on the people you're hearing, the people you trust be critical of, you know, the analysts you trust. And so, no, I think that's part of it. Moving forward, you know, my first name on this list is the other top pick from the 2023 draft, which is Isaiah Foskey. And I thought Dennis Allen's comments on Isaiah were interesting, but also just pretty honest in terms of, you know, he's asked what Isaiah has to do to make a bigger impact, to be a breakout player in year two. And this is what he said.
Number one, he's got to cut it loose. You know, I think this last year, you know, was a big learning year for him. And so my hope is that he has a great offseason. He's able to spend, you know, he understands what we're doing defensively. And so he's less concerned about, you know, learning the defense, and he's able to just go cut it loose and go play. And I think that's what I'm looking to see. Now, it's going to be a while before we can actually see that happen. You're not seeing it, you know, really as you go through OTAs and minicamp. But I think that's just part of the process. But I really want to see him kind of cut it loose.
Yeah, and I think that answer is interesting, because it does kind of point to something that a lot of rookies struggle with in the NFL. And it's just that there's a lot of sensory overload. You're learning a different style of defense. You're learning a lot of technique. And I think that can kind of overwhelm a lot of players early on in the process. And the issue for Isaiah, and it's not dissimilar to what you saw with Trevor in year one, is that development that you would have wanted to see throughout his rookie season was I almost said hamstrung, but it was actually his quad that kind of became an issue when you really never got to see him. I thought he was actually showing some positive signs in the defense in his limited work, but you never got to see him kind of capitalize on that as the season went on, because that injury lingered, and then he tried to come back and he re-injured it, and then he was out the rest of the year. But I do think that, you know, he's a guy who you're going to want to see worked into that rotation. And particularly in camp, I need to see him show signs, you know, especially because the offensive tackles he's going against are guys that we do not believe in. So, like, kind of like Carl Granderson last year, you know, we were talking throughout camp, ooh, like, wow, Carl's winning, man, a lot.
Yes, like, he was.
Is Carl good, or is it because Trevor is bad? And, you know, I think a little bit of both. But, you know, Carl kind of delivered on that throughout the season, got his new contract. And that's what I want to see from Isaiah in the preseason, in the training camp, is I want to see him be a guy who you struggle to keep off the field, who makes you feel like, man, we got to find ways to get him snapped. And he wasn't that last year. So I think for him to be a breakout player this year, it's got to start early. And if you believe what Dennis Allen is saying, he's got to start trusting his own technique and his own ability more than he did last year. And there's reason to think he can. You know, one of the reasons you brought him in was because he's a veteran player in college. He was a team leader. He is a high character guy. So I think he's the obvious choice here to be a breakout player. And, you know, for kind of the inverse of what we talked about with Brian, a breakout for Isaiah Foskey will be a 4 or 5 sack season.
Yeah, just one of those things where I think, like you said, it's interesting to hear Dennis Allen say he just wants to hear him cut it loose, because you never feel like his rookie season you saw him comfortable, I guess, enough to be able to think he could even do that. Hopefully year two for him, he's got more of that belief in himself to let it unleash on the field, because obviously a guy was a second round pick for you. You're expecting a lot more contributions than what he gave up year one. And I don't know if my question's more for him in the run game or actually as a pass rusher.
Well, I do think that's part of him getting on the field, is being more trusted in the run game. And, you know, if I had to pick a player that on this team that I think he has similar traits to, it'd be Cam Jordan. He's a little bit more athletic than Cam Jordan, but from a physical standpoint, they're similar. And so, well, hopefully he can kind of be a sponge on Cam Jordan and learn all of those things. But yeah, if you can be an effective rundowns player, great. I just need you to have an impact, because there's too many players, there's too many draft picks over the last several seasons that you'd be like, man, they just did not make an impact, particularly in the early rounds. But all right, let's move on. One more defensive player from each. Who's your pick?
I'm going to go with the guy that is really out of necessity, too, because no more Marcus May, and let's see what Jordan Howden can do in his second season with this team. He showed, I thought, some pretty good promise year one. There was a time, though, that Jonathan Abram ended up starting over him. I still believe, though, that Howden can be a pretty good force for this team in the secondary, and I'm just curious to see what exactly his role can grow to on this defense, because maybe, just maybe, is he the nickel guy you're looking for too? I don't know.
But you read my mind. That's kind of what I was looking at. I was like, I wonder if Jordan ends up being a guy that you really kind of try out in the nickel this offseason in a way that you really didn't want to do last year, because you're right, didn't want to overwhelm him. You know, he worked at both safety spots. I think that's kind of, when you're bringing in a young guy, you want to make sure he can do his main job before you start giving him other jobs, right? It's part of the reason you didn't really throw Alante Taylor into the nickel until his second season, because you want to make sure he can be a pro first, and you don't want to ruin someone's confidence trying to make them do something they've never done before. And that's not true. I think Jordan has played the nickel in college, but it's a completely different animal playing the nickel in college versus playing nickel in the NFL. But exactly. I do think that he has the traits to do it. And that kind of leads me into my pick, which, you know, we this is kind of a yin and yang kind of situation, because, you know, I talked about it's tough to be a breakout player in year 5 or 6, but that's what I think my pick is actually on the fringe of being, and it's Jonathan Abram.
There you go.
Now, yeah, it's funny. You look at Jonathan Abram and you're like, well, we already know everything there is to know about Jonathan Abram, and maybe you're right. But at the same time, you look up Jonathan Abram and you're like, man, this dude's 27 years old. He's still in his prime. You know, right. They're, you know, you're talking about a defense that has Cam Jordan, that has Tyrann Mathieu, that has DeMario Davis on it. Guys in their 30s. Compared to them, he's a spring chicken. You know, and one of the reasons that I just think, you know, he was a first round pick for a reason, right? He has a first round pick profile. And yes, he was what you would call him, a bust in Oakland. But I do think that, you know, one of the difficulties of being a first round pick from a player perspective is the expectations placed upon you are so high, particularly as a safety in the first round. Like, we talk about positional value. When teams go outside of that and they pick a running back, they pick a tight end, they pick a safety in the first round, what the flip side of that is, like, yeah, you have really high expectations for this player. They need to show up and make an impact right away. And when they don't, they become a bust, and it just ruins everything. And you put a guy into a bad situation, Oakland or Vegas or wherever they were, you know, that was not a situation where you have a guy who maybe needs to develop and shows up, and there's a strong culture that you can allow for that. And so I think that worked against him. Now you're talking about the Saints. He has 5 years of experience. He showed up late in the year, and he really kind of attached himself to this Dennis Allen scheme in a way that gives you confidence. And I wouldn't be surprised if he wins that battle coming out of camp over Jordan Howden. And it's not about Jordan. I think Jordan is a good player and will continue to develop. But I wouldn't be surprised if, yeah, you're like, yeah, okay, maybe you take a backseat to the veteran and learn this season a little bit more. And if you do need to play, you're ready. And we're going to teach you how to play the slot. You're going to be an option in the slot. And Jonathan Abram ends up being a guy, right? So he appeared in 9 games. He had 26 tackles, 14 solo tackles. He had that big interception against the Bucks. He also forced a fumble against the Bucks in that Week 17 game. And I don't know. Like, I think people are sleeping on Jonathan Abram because he's an old head, right? Because he's a veteran who started on the practice squad last year. But if you can play, you can play. And we know that he has the skill set. We know he's only 27. We know he had a big impact late in the year. And we know he's a veteran presence in that room. People respect him. So, you know, I don't know what a breakout season for him would look like, but I wouldn't be surprised at all to see this guy start, I don't know, 12, 14 games, rack up 60-something tackles, intercept a few passes, make an impact. And to me, if that's what you get out of Jonathan Abram, then that's a breakout season for a guy in year 6.
I will say, too, in his favor, it's almost being back home. You know, Mississippi guy playing now in Louisiana, mentions that obviously being close to family doesn't – it's not too bad to get them to come to the Superdome at all kind of thing to see you play. And you know what? If it's something where someone's more comfortable back in their – in a realm where they're more familiar with, so be it. I know had a run, I think, with the Seattle Seahawks a little bit after the Raiders. And it didn't work out from there either.
Yeah, he was with the Seahawks and the Packers for short stints before coming to the Saints. But yeah, I mean, like, again, you're talking about a first round pick that never delivered on that with the Raiders. And you could fill, you know, a museum with all of the first round picks for the Raiders that didn't pan out. And is it all because the players were not capable, or is it because the Raiders were not capable of developing those players? I you know, I think in some cases, yeah, you could probably point to the player and say this was a bad pick because the player wasn't good enough. But in a lot of instances, and I think more instances than a lot of people think is the case, players that could develop into quality NFL players have their potential careers torpedoed by an organization that can't get its head out of its ass. And I think if any organization, you could qualify that as probably the Raiders for the last decade.
No, anyway. I like the pick just because I don't consider Abram has reached his peak as a player at 27 years old for sure yet.
I mean, I think that's a good way to put it. Like, I wouldn't say that he's on the backside of his career.
Right.
If you like, I'm not saying this guy's going to be peak Troy Polamalu. I'm saying if you can be a quality NFL starter at 27 years old, I mean, come on, why wouldn't that be possible for a guy who now understands the game a little better as a year in a scheme? And worked his way up off the practice squad. The thing that really stood out to me last year, if you remember the Rams game, and this is just, you know, this has nothing to do with being on the field, but it just feels like something that you have to have respect in a room to do this, is if you remember, Alante Taylor got benched. He was sitting on the bench pouting, you know, like, and I don't say that in an insulting way. I mean, he was. Like, it was a frustrating moment. You got benched, and you take it different type of ways. He wasn't over there berating anybody. He was just sitting on the bench frustrated. And, you know, the guy who I saw walk over to him and kind of get in his face and be like, hey, man, you know, like, pick him up, was Jonathan Abram. Now, a lot of people talked to him. Derek Carr talked to him. A couple other guys talked to him. But the guy that I felt like was really resonating in that conversation was Jonathan Abram. And when Jonathan got done talking to him, Alante stood up, went and stood over on the sidelines and approached the rest of that game with a much better attitude. And I don't know. Like, I like that. That's what I want to see. That's why one of the reasons I gravitate toward Tyrann Mathieu is because he's that kind of guy. A guy you respect in that room, and a guy who can lead other guys, even if he's not a starter. He wasn't starting at that point. He started the next week. but yeah, anyway, I was kind of going through this, and I was like, there's some obvious choices, right? You know, there's some other guys that you could pick. You know, you could say Carl Granderson, maybe he breaks out and has a 12, 14 sack season to really kind of, you know, come on. Again, you mentioned Jordan Howden. I think there's a few pieces of this defense that could have a big impact that we aren't anticipating. I think Jonathan could be one of them.
Definitely a guy, too. Like I said, you're rooting for the former first-round pick talent has been accumulating now on the Saints. We'll see if they can end up, you know, taking what was considered gold to someone else and finally, you know, mining that and really having it come to life. I definitely like what we saw from Jonathan Abram last year. It wasn't anything that knocked your socks off, but definitely a guy that I feel like has more to give.
And if you need any likability points, he opened a ranch in Mississippi, yes. or he's going to open a ranch in Mississippi. They're right. going to have outreach programs for kids to go and like learn about horses and stuff. He said that he grew up with horses, and at his house or ranch or wherever he grew up, they would basically just wander around in the front yard like dogs. And they, like, they're just
that's
at the
so
house.
Cool.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's my pick. I don't have any more that I really want to dive into. Do you have anywhere you want to hit on before we go on to the offense?
No, I can go over to the other side of the ball. Just a guy that I think more of I'm hoping that we're talking about him as a breakout star is definitely a guy in Peyton Turner. It's like, when are things going to finally click for him? Because there have been little moments where you've seen that quote-unquote flash, but it's just been a bad series of unfortunate injury history for him.
A series of unfortunate injuries.
Yeah, right. There you go. Right.
Yeah, no, and it's funny because we talked about kind of the goalposts are in different locations for different players. Like Brian Brzees are very far down. If he reaches them, it means he had an incredible season, but he could fall way short of that and still have a good season. For Peyton, I mean, what is a breakout season for him? Just playing in 12 games?
Right, pretty much. Like, being able to manage more than half a year, right?
Right. I mean, even a half a year would be a win. Like if he got through 9 games, that would be massive.
Yeah.
But no, I hope that's the case. I truly do. Cause I like Peyton. He's a guy who you talk to and you're like, you walk away from every conversation being like, I like the guy. I like his approach. I think his head's in the right place. Can't stay on the field. So yeah, I mean, his breakout would be not breaking anything.
Sadly, that is very accurate.
Yeah. But all right, let's wrap up that segment. We just talked about breakout players on the defensive side. Again, guys like Isaiah Foskey, Brian Brzees, Jonathan Abram, Jordan Howden, and maybe even Peyton Turner on that list. Next segment, we are going to shift to the offensive side of the ball, which has a lot of exciting names on it, but it's still a lot of question marks as well. This is Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Steve Geller. We will be right back. One more segment to go here on Inside Black and Gold. It's a podcast about the Saints. So we're going to talk about the Saints, even though Steve teed me up for UConn earlier. We're not going to talk any more UConn men's basketball, even though they're the best team in the land for another year. But we are going to continue our conversation about breakout players, breakout candidates for the Saints in 2024. We just spent a whole lot of time on the defense, so let's shift over to the offense. Steve, I'm going to start with you again. Who is your kind of top pick for a breakout player on the offense this year for the Saints?
It's a guy that we thought we were getting teed up to have a breakout year a year ago last season. And it wasn't just you, wasn't just me. Anybody that went to Saints training camp was really writing down the name Juwan Johnson a ton, pushing it out there. I've had friends in different states still mad at me for their fantasy drafts and taking Juwan because you said he was going to be this monster on the field for them. And it really just didn't materialize that breakout year in 2023 for Juwan. Finished it off a lot stronger than he started it. And I know injuries were an issue. So hopefully a healthy Juwan will lead to that breakout year for Juwan Johnson in this offense. Unless you end up going drafting a guy like Brock Bowers. And I don't know what happens to Juwan then.
Yeah, that's the tough part for me, and it's like this is the same breakout we were predicting last year, and it right. didn't happen. Now exactly. You can look at that. I think that calf injury affected him more than he was willing to admit. I think he tried to play through it, didn't work, and I think that affected the chemistry that he could build with Derek. And once you saw that kind of connection materialize, those final four games, you know, Giants. He had a touchdown in three consecutive games. He had one against the Giants, one against the Rams, one against the Bucks. And that Bucks game, which was another game, he injured his shoulder on the first drive of that game on a touchdown catch, or the play before a touchdown catch, and right. still went on to get 8 passes for 90 yards and a touchdown. And he took over that game. Like there were points where he was just unguardable. And that's what we thought we were going to see a lot more of this season. We just didn't. But I do think that guy is in there. I really right. do. And when he was on, this team was on. This offense was on. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think there's a scenario where they go and draft one of these top end tight ends, and maybe you supplant Jawan if it's a Brock Bowers. If it's a Theo Johnson or someone like that, he probably takes a backseat this season, but you still kind of see down the road, you're like, all right, I think this guy's going to be the tight end. But I think most likely you end up running it back with Jawan and hoping that the guy you envisioned last year is the guy you see this year. And thankfully you did get glimpses of that at the end of the season, so that we just, it's not like we were completely making stuff up, right?
It's sure. Like I said, in the beginning, it felt like, and you're like, man, I feel awful for all those big recommendations I was given.
Yeah. Carolina, 2 catches on 3 targets for 13 yards in the Packers, 2 catches on 4 targets for 12 yards against the Colts. He missed several games against the Colts. 1 catch, 5 yards. He actually had a solid game against the Bears. It's like the, you know, 5 catches on 5 targets, only 29 yards. We did catch a touchdown. I think that was from Taysom Hill. And yeah, I mean, like, he didn't impact the games, you know, and that's the frustrating thing, because you didn't really bring in a lot of pressure behind him either. You know, like you brought in Foster Moreau, but the ceiling, that what your expectations were for Foster Moreau, they had to be low. I mean, not because you don't like Foster as a player, but because you know who Foster is as a player, which is kind of a do the dirty work, block, you know, maybe move the chains, make some catches over the middle of the field, but not your move tight end. So I like that pick. Moving on, you know, and that's kind of a good example too of like, oh, that's not all second year players. You know, he's a guy who will be entering year 3 of being a tight end. So it's, you know, maybe it took a little time. Well, one thing that's tough on the offensive side of the ball too, we talked about this before coming on, you know, there's a tendency to want to take skill position players, and that ignores 5 positions on the defense that have a huge impact on the games, but don't really record any stats. And so like, what would a breakout for Trevor Penning be? Probably just starting the entire season when he's healthy and staying healthy would be a breakout for Trevor Penning. So I'm not going to list him, because I think your hope for him has to be starter,
right?
Very least. So that wouldn't be a breakout to me. That would be the baseline that I need him to get to.
That's just your job.
Do your job and don't get benched. And you could call it a breakout if you want. I'll just call it thank you. The guy who I think is a breakout candidate, and we know everyone kind of stopped talking about, is Nick Saldiveri. This is a guy the Saints drafted in the 4th round last year. They traded up to get him. They felt pretty highly about him. They were always planning to move him into guard. And is he a guy who can contribute? Is he a guy who can get out there and make an impact? Like, I don't think James Hurst is a great option at guard. I love James Hurst as a locker room guy. I think he's a solid backup. Like, he's a good swing backup. He's, there's value there that he could come in a pinch at virtually any position other than center and play well enough. But is Nick Saldiveri a potential starter in the NFL? I don't know, but this is the season I'd like to see a little bit more from him. You know, I want him to be active. I want him to be the backup. And when he gets opportunities, to go in there and perform well. So if there's an offensive lineman, and just because I wanted to pick at least one offensive lineman who could potentially break out and have a much bigger impact than what you might anticipate, it's probably him.
Yeah, going through stuff, obviously I wanted to mention Penning as well, but yeah, it's like breakout, though. I can't really categorize it as that. Saldiveri, though, too, was definitely on my list of potential guys there. And yeah, curious to see. I mean, he's almost a necessary guy that you need at this point to develop and be a part, if nothing else, the rotation of guys on the offensive line, because things just, it's slim pickings right now.
Yeah. What I'll say for Nick, as opposed to Trevor, is that the reason these situations are different to me is, you know, Nick was always a guy that you anticipated having a redshirt season. Like, this was never a situation where you were like, okay, yeah, definitely first guy off the bench from day one. No, he's at an Old Dominion, a smaller school. There's going to be a little bit more of a ramp up for him, but you got a whole year. He was healthy all year. So there was no missed time. There was no missed assignments in terms of like, okay, this is how you're learning. This is what I need you to work on. You need to have worked on it. You need to have gone through the offseason and gone through a program and fix anything that you're deficient at. And then I need you to show up at OTAs this year and be a guy that, you know, is in contention to start. Now, you don't have to start. I don't need you to start, but I do need you to be in the conversation. I need you to push a guy like a James Hurst or whoever else, maybe not Cesar Ruiz, because I think he is entrenched, but that's what I want to see from him. Moving on from that, who's your next offensive guy?
Pretty easy one, I think, here. A guy that was a third-round pick for the team, running back Kendra Miller. Rough go overall, dealt with injuries year one, an offensive line that didn't help much. Did get his first touchdown of the year against the Falcons in the proper form, not in a cheap, you know, lineup that was designated to be a kneel down at the end of the game. We won't talk about that, though.
It was a nice one, too. I'm going to do this myself kind of touchdown.
See a lot of promise in him, and definitely someone who I think could, it's tough to even say break out, but at least show why he was a third round pick this season.
Oh, I disagree. I think you're spot on with the breakout. And, you know, he's kind of funny because he had a very similar season to Isaiah Foskey. In that you saw some nice moments. A guy who you're like, I think he could contribute given an opportunity, but then he got hurt and he missed a significant chunk of the season. The biggest difference between Kendra and Isaiah Foskey in terms of expectations here is Kendra was able to get back for week 18 and not only played at an incredibly high level. He was the offense at points of that game, and you would give him the ball and you would just be like, well, there it is. There's that burst. There's that spark I've been missing from the run game. And like you mentioned, that touchdown, I mean, that play was dead. And I think it was a big play. I think it was a third down play in the red zone, an area the Saints, you know, had struggled to score in, not at that point. They had actually turned it around by that point. But when they were struggling, it was because they weren't getting in from more than a yard away. Like, it was either you run it in from the 1 yard line or you're kind of stuck. You didn't have plays like that where the running back got the ball in space and just made a guy miss. You know, I think he made Jesse Bates miss in the hole. And, you know, this was a dead play. It was a toss, like a wide toss. And he gets to the kind of the inflection point of that run and is like, I'm not getting there. So I guess I'm just going to put my head down and try to run through a guy. And that's what he did. He made a move. He made Jesse Bates miss and he got into the end zone. And, you know, you don't need a lot with Alvin Kamara to have a successful offensive attack. Alvin does so much, but you do need a counterpunch.
Yes.
And that was what you thought you were going to get with Jamal Williams, and whether it was due to an injury that slowed him down or just, you know, maybe he's just getting, you know, he's at that point as a running back that you do lose a step pretty quickly and it's tough to gauge when that is. So I don't know. We'll see what happens when he comes back this year for training camp.
It was just a massive drop off, obviously, from what he did at Detroit to then nothing, you know?
Right. It's crazy to see that drop off that quickly, particularly in short yardage. If all he did was come in and be effective in short yardage, you'd be like, well, okay, that's what we wanted. He wasn't that. So that's why when Kendra got out there and you gave him the ball and suddenly it was like he's ripping off 8, 10, 12 yards and he's knocking people back. And like, it's like that makes life so much easier as an offense. And you watch the Saints operate in that game and you're like, man, okay, this is what I was expecting to see. And I don't know what a breakout for Kendra would have been. You know, what were his stats at the end of the day? They were pretty low.
Yeah.
41 attempts, 156 yards. Obviously that touchdown, he also had 10 catches. So he did show he can catch the ball. And he had that nice diving catch in the preseason from Jameis. So like the hands are there. If you end up getting him somewhere in the range of 500 rushing yards, 5 or 6 touchdowns, that to me, that is a significant breakout.
Yeah. And I'm anxious to see obviously what he's able to do in the receiving game because not much was thought of when he was, you know, coming in initially from the Saints, but I definitely love this kid's confidence too. I want him to be able to unleash that as well because when he got first drafted, he came in right away saying he's coming for that number one spot. And obviously that didn't happen year one. So maybe he can make it happen this season.
Yeah. And I just think that pairing of him and Alvin, it's a lot closer to the, and I'm not, everyone's going to say, oh, you're comparing him to Mark Ingram. I'm not, but I am just from a skill set perspective, it's a lot closer to Alvin and Mark Ingram. And why I say that is like, you know, Latavius Murray was solid in that role, but it was always a tell when he was on the field because he just wasn't a guy you would ever put in there to go run around and catch a pass. And I think Mark was enough of a threat to do that, that it did keep defenses a little bit more off balance than a Jamal would or a Latavius did. Whereas Kendre, I think he has kind of that marking him. Like if I had to compare him from a pass reception perspective, he's a lot closer to Mark than he is to Alvin, but Mark was good enough as a pass catcher.
Totally, right.
And I like that ability to be a little bit more unpredictable in your sets. And I think that does allow that. One more guy here. And I kind of put this in the category kind of closer to the Brian Brazee, where we talked about in order for him to have a breakout year, he has to have a huge year just because of the expectations he set for himself after last season. And for me, that guy is Rashid Shaheed. Now, Rashid is going to have to do a lot in order to have a breakout year, a breakout performance, because, you know, he was such an elite deep threat that it's going to be hard for him to top that part of his game. 46 catches, 719 yards, 5 touchdowns. Yeah, like he was that guy that stretched the field in a way that you just haven't had in recent years. And, you know, there were multiple games that he changed because of what he was able to do. Like the Texans game, I think the Saints were really close to getting blown out in that game before that long touchdown that really kind of got the offense a little bit more on track and kept them in touch. And they were able to make a rally and have a chance to win the game late. They obviously didn't. The Colts game was his biggest impact. I think he had like 4 catches for 150 yards, something like that. Just they could not guard him downfield. And he's going to still be that guy. But there's going to be ways that I need to see him make more of an impact. I want to see him get the ball in space in Clint Kubiak's offense in ways that he was not able to last year and really get that run after catch more so than just that over the top. I want to get him the ball underneath and allow him to use that kind of punt returner ability, kick returner ability. On top of that, he's going to have opportunities this year in the kick return game that he just didn't have last year or the year before.
Right.
And I think teams that have that elite returner are really going to have games swing in moments, in big moments on long returns, whether it be for a touchdown or whether it just be a return that sets up a drive at the 40 or the 50. And I think from a return perspective, now that you have bring returners back into the game, he could have a huge breakout in that part. Now, he's already, like as a punt returner, he was an all-pro punt returner. So it's going to be hard for him to make an impact as a punt returner that really kind of blows you away. You know, maybe if he returns 2 or 3 kicks, I think you have a guy who you could see returning 3-4 touchdowns in this new kind of setup, assuming they kick him the ball, but it's tough. And I think he's a guy who, you know, without Michael Thomas, you kind of open up that ability of a guy to catch, you know, 60, 70 passes with more targets. Chris Olave is obviously going to be the primary, and maybe if you bring in a Hunter Renfro or another veteran, they steal some of that target share. But I think Rashid is a guy who you're only kind of scratching the surface of what he can actually do, and he's another guy that missed time with injuries. So if he can be healthy, if he can kind of build that rapport with Derek even more, I think he could very much be a guy you're looking at 1,000 yards, 70 catches, 6-7 touchdowns, DeSean Jackson type numbers.
Yeah, for what you mentioned, too, I'm definitely buying stock in Shaheed this season going into the year with a new OC and Clint Kubiak. I'm very curious to see what kind of, you know, what he has Shaheed getting into. In no way am I saying that Shaheed is like a Deebo Samuel, but I think that Kubiak could end up using him in similar type ways.
I agree completely. So anyone else you want to throw on that list before we wrap this sucker up here?
No, that was pretty much it. And like you said, I wanted to bring in like a Trevor Penning into the discussion. We talked about it a little, and it's really just, I just need the guy to be on the field at this point. It's not even, you know, forget living up to being a first round draft pick. Just get on the damn field and give this team some snaps and hopefully some reliability and protecting Derek Carr.
Yep, I agree with you. I agree with you. The other guy that feels worth mentioning is A.T. Perry. Now, yeah, you know, I think we saw a lot of what he can do, and he can be a weapon in the red zone. Now, is he a guy who's going to have a different role, a different type of role in Clint Kubiak's offense? That's tough to say, but I do feel like, you know, he could be a guy that catches double-digit touchdowns if you use him the right way. I don't know if he's ever going to be a guy that catches 1,000 yards or 80 passes, but he can be a guy that you cannot guard in the red zone, because that's what he was last year. You threw him the ball in the red zone, he was coming down with it. And it's good. I'd like to see him get a little stronger. I think that's probably priority number one for him, is just become a little more sturdy. And, you know, we talked about the hands a lot in the preseason last year. I'd like to see some work done on that, because I think you can improve your hands. I think that's a part of your game that if you practice at it, you can improve your hands. Not infinitely. Like, there is a limit. Some guys just have these crazy hands. Odell Beckham, for example, Mike Thomas had just had vice grips for hands. And I don't know if you can develop that.
But Mike talked about doing hand yoga. He would actually do hand yoga to increase the size, help increase size.
Yeah, and strength. You know, like, right. Stuff you don't think about is hand strength, but it is a thing. Like, if you ever try to arm wrestle somebody who's like really good at arm wrestling, and you're just like, holy shit.
Right.
Like, I could tell before you even start. It's like, I'm not beating this guy. Like, my hand feels like it's about to snap in half.
Right.
Anyway. But yeah, I'd like to see AT put some work in there, and I think he could be another breakout candidate. But it's kind of telling that the two of these guys are wide receivers, not because I don't have faith in them, but because you need them. You know, like in order to have a big season from an offensive perspective, you probably need one or both of these guys to have a breakout type season. And, you know, that's a lot to ask. So we'll see. But either way, I think we have a pretty good list here. If you have any that you think that we missed, throw it in the comments.
Right.
Hit me up on Twitter at @Jeff_Nowak. Let me know who you think is a breakout candidate. And, you know, maybe we can do a kind of follow-up segment in the next episode. But I think we have a good one. So on offense, we have Kendre Miller, Rashid Shaheed, Nick Saldivari, Jawan Johnson, and then at a lesser level, A.T. Perry and Trevor Penning. I think those are all a lot of young players, a lot of intriguing players that could have a big impact this season.
We'll see what the team ends up adding very soon in the draft coming up. And I think everyone's expecting, though, that first round to be offensive line minded.
All right. I think we have done it. I think we've done it here. So I'm going to leave you with words of wisdom, from your, you know, second favorite Saints quarterback here.
Nice try with the hate. We ain't doing that no more. Appreciate you though.
What's he eating, peanut butter?
Yeah, it's like a dog that has peanut butter on the roof of his mouth. Maybe he just watched Mickey's press conference and was like, I could do that.
No, that is the be all end all right there.
Yeah. But all right, this is Inside Black and Gold. Thanks for listening. Appreciate you.
See you next time.